call the House Committee on Healthcare to order for this April 24th and open a public hearing on which one?
Senate Bill 754A.
On Senate Bill 754A. Call Dr. Steiner Hayward to join us.
Thank you so much, Chair Greenlee, Vice Chair Knows, Vice Chair Hayden, members of the committee. For the record, Elizabeth Steiner Hayward, State Senate. And I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you today about Senate Bill 754, along with my colleague and co-chief sponsor, Representative Vial, and Representative Kenny Geyer, who's also co-chief sponsoring this bill with us. This bill has one simple goal: to raise the legal age for tobacco products and inhalant delivery systems, e-cigarettes, hookahs, all that kind of stuff, to 21. Line them up with alcohol and cannabis. As a family physician, I really believe that preventing disease is better than curing it, and tobacco is clearly one of the leading causes of illness around Oregon and the nation. It causes death, and it causes increased medical costs. It's also personal. Like many of you, I have lost dear family members to tobacco-related illnesses, including my father, my father-in-law, and my dearly beloved aunt. And so this is a public health bill. It's that simple. It's also a money-saving bill. It's really a simple bill. It's a long bill because we had to have a lot of conforming pieces to it, but the only important parts are sections 1 through 5. And I'm going to run over those very quickly for you. Section 1 describes all the things that it covers, tobacco products and inhalant delivery systems. Section 2 defines penalties for retailers. We believe that clerks and store owners want to follow the law, and we're trying to make it simple and clean for them. And I'm going to get back to that issue in just a moment. So we also want to deliberately draft the bill to focus more on encouraging education. We've streamlined the penalty structure for what it currently is and focused more on the managers and owners rather than the clerks because they're paid differently. So the clerks will have a fine of $50 for selling, managers $250 for the first or second violation in a two-year period, and $500 for third or subsequent. For owners, $500 for the first or second violation in a two-year period, and $1,000 for third or subsequent. For context, the current penalty for selling tobacco is a Class A violation, and these would just be civil penalties, not less than $250 up to $1,000. And for clerks furnishing alcohol to a minor, it's a Class A misdemeanor. So we're really trying to focus more on civil penalties and education rather than criminal interaction. Section 3 is around signage. Section 4 prohibits people under 21 from buying or possessing tobacco or inhalant delivery systems, although it does allow for people under 21 to participate in stings for enforcement, just the way people under 18 can do that now. Of note, however, based on some suggestions we got on the Senate side, there are no penalties for people 18, 19, or 20-year-olds who are found to be in possession of tobacco or inhalant delivery systems. They are not the target. We are not trying to get these people in trouble. There was some concern about people who are already 18 or 19 and have been smoking and are addicted. We have sympathy for them. We don't want to enable them, but they're more likely to know someone over 21 who can buy for them. We'll provide them with it, and if they're found with it, oh well. Section 5 is just around encouraging employers, requiring employers to train their employees how to check IDs and make sure they don't sell. And the rest of it is all of conforming amendments. There's been some concern on the Senate side, I don't know if this is true in the House, about emergency clauses this year. We were asked to keep the emergency clause in this bill because it is a public health measure, and the owners of the stores and OHA need time to get ready for the implementation. The actual implementation of the age change wouldn't be till January 1st of 2018, so people would have time to become aware. This will really decrease access. I had a young constituent come visit with me in December, and when he heard I was working on this bill, he said, "That's really great." And I said, "Why?" He said, "Well, I'm a senior in high school." He's at Valley Catholic. I'm 18, and I know altogether too many people who use tobacco, and they want me to buy for them. And every single day I have to say no to somebody, and I don't like it. It puts me in a tough position. But if you raise the age to 21, high school kids aren't going to know people who are over 21. They're going to be much less likely to have people buying cigarettes for them. So there's my nice 18-year-old constituent speaking exactly to one of my arguments without even prompting. Of note, we did consider amendments analogous to what you'll see as the dash 10s that are now up in OLS over in the Senate side about having some kind of a grandfather period. We were strongly advised against that and by the retailers who were very, very concerned about their ability to comply with the law. They were concerned about confusion. They were concerned about this. And the grocers and the most of the convenience stores who have been neutral on the bill will go to opposed if we change that. And I think that will complicate the bill a little more. I think you'll have a little bit of trouble getting concurrence. The bill does have very broad support, including over 35 organizations statewide and the Oregon Military Department. The Military Department and the Pentagon both consider tobacco to be one of the leading threats to military readiness. As you can imagine, it's a little tough to hump a 100-pound pack if you're smoking a pack a day. And they don't want young soldiers being affected by tobacco. We've got widespread support across the state. AOC itself is endorsed, and you'll see letters in OLS from a wide range of county commissioners, both rural and urban. This is not a rural-urban issue. This is a public health issue. It's expensive. The state currently spends $100 million in general fund a biennium on Medicaid patients who smoke. Extra. $100 million a biennium. That's 10% of our general fund deficit in OHA. 10%. Right there. And I would like to close, just in case anybody thinks it's a new thing for the government to care about people smoking, with a quote from a treatise against smoking by King James I, circa 1605. And the full testimony of it is in OLS for your reading pleasure. You'll love the spelling. He says, "Smoking is a custom loathsome to the eye, hateful to the nose, harmful to the brain, dangerous to the lungs, and in the black, stinking fume thereof, nearest resembling the horrible Stygian smoke of the pit that is bottomless." Mm. 1605, folks.
That's where bottomless pit came.
Representative Vile.
Well, remarkable that we're still here talking about this issue. Chair Greenlick, Vice Chair Noss, Vice Chair Hayden, members of the committee, Rich Vile, House District 26. I'm really grateful that I was asked to consider signing on to this bill. It was actually the very first bill I signed on to as a state representative, and I feel pretty strongly about it. My free market side causes me to consider, is it really necessary that we do something like this? But for me, that ship kind of sailed when we, as a society, began to make sure that we were going to share the cost of our health care with each other. And given that circumstance, as Senator Steiner Hayward just said, the fact that we spend so much money, including public money, to try and solve the problems that are caused by smoking is one of the things that convinces me this is the right thing to do. As was stated, it sets the same place for drinking and marijuana, as does smoking, makes all three of those come into line together. My good friend, Jerry Warren, who was Chief Advocate General of the Oregon military for a long time, has reinforced to me the fact that this really is a big problem with respect to military readiness. So I could talk a lot more about this. To me, this is not much different than a car seat bill or something very similar to that, and I think it's a very important thing. Again, I'm grateful for the opportunity to participate with you, and I urge that you pass this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Happy to take any questions. And you'll be hearing from two people who can offer a lot of the medical side of this. I could, but I wanted to focus on the policy side.
Representative Hack.
Thank you, Chair. Quick question as it relates to the inhalant side. I had a piece of legislation that would stop the sale of inhalants for marijuana to those between the age of 18 and 21. And they buy it under the preface that they're buying those for tobacco use. So I'm hoping that this piece of legislation will keep that from happening, since that piece did not move. And I think it was kind of under the impression that this would help take care of that. Will this stop?
Yes.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yes.
Thank you.
Simple answer.
Representative Hayden.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Greenwood. So I got a couple of questions on the revenue flows of this. If this bill is to move forward in the meeting materials here, looks like there would be up to a $5.48 billion decrease in revenue from sales. So how is that covered? Where does that money come from?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hayden, that money is covered by the savings incurred by not having people smoke, and we will see some of those savings almost immediately. In the first biennium, I can pretty well guarantee you that we'll start to see some savings, and by the second biennium, we'll see substantially more, because we know that within 24 hours of somebody stopping smoking, we will see decreases in blood pressure, we'll see improvements in lung function. Dr. Drucker, who will be testifying soon, can give you even more details than I, but we see decreased risk in heart attacks, all those kinds of things. Now, while our youngest Oregonians who are smoking are not likely to have heart attacks as an immediate result, they are more likely to have respiratory infections for which they'll need to be treated, and I think we can easily save. That is only 5% of the total general fund that we spend biennially on caring for smokers on Medicaid.
So here in the revenue impact statement, it says that would come from the ODOT Elderly Disabled Special Transportation Program, the OHA Non-Medical Community Mental Health Programs, OHA Public Health Programs related to tobacco prevention and cessation. This reduction in revenue could mean the reduction in these services or elimination of these services in certain regions of the state. So just to give some background in there, I looked into the master tobacco settlement money, and prior to 2013, we didn't put any money in education or cessation programs. In 2013, we've started putting in 0.5% in the stamp tax or the tobacco tax. We put about $3 million into that program. So you got $4, maybe $5 million totally. Now, I've noted that CDC recommends a 40% of that money get spent on prevention in one of the articles that I read, but looks like we're putting a very small amount of money into prevention and cessation of tobacco, yet, if I'm reading this correctly, it looks like we're going to balance the small amount of money that this will cost with the little bit of programs that we do for that. Is that a correct statement?
Chair Greenlee. Vice Chair Hayden, I'm not quite sure I can completely answer that. I would say this. I think the best prevention we can do for tobacco is to keep people from starting in the first place. It's much easier to keep people from starting to smoke than to get them to quit once they've started. Nicotine, as you'll hear from my colleagues later, is more addictive than virtually any other substance than methamphetamine. It's more addictive than heroin. It's more addictive than cocaine. It's certainly more addictive than cannabis or alcohol. And so the $5 million that we lose in revenue is essentially money that we're investing in tobacco prevention by implementing this legislation and keeping kids from starting to smoke. Money's fungible, and we can move things around. If we discover that we're really that losing this $5 million is a real detriment to senior citizens' transportation, and I understand that, Representative. Thank you. I'm happy to, as a person who lives and breathes budget, to look for other ways to fund that. But I firmly believe that the best way to spend money on prevention cessation is to pass this bill. That $5 million is cheap at the price.
So, Chair Greenlee, Representative Hayden, I might just add that I think the conversation about use of those tobacco settlement funds is a much bigger conversation than just this one. And again, that's a nuance on the budget that is probably worth talking about, but it should not be the reason why we don't take this step, which in the long run is going to make a much bigger difference than that $5 million a year.
We can fund my $2 pack cigarette tax, which is go to public health in there. But
So to follow up on, thank you. Just I encourage you to look at the Dash 12, which is an attempt to retain these very small amounts. Keep in mind that we're talking about $350 to $400 million come in from master settlements per biennium or the sale of tobacco. And the Dash 12 is an attempt to just keep the little tiny bit of money that we spend. So I encourage you to look at our Dash 12 that I'll be potentially introducing. I have sent to Sandy. It's not on there.
I have not received it yet, but that's okay.
Well, it's coming through the system.
Okay.
But that Dash 12 would be an attempt just to retain the status quo of the money and balance that somewhere else in the budget. The other concern that I have is that we have people that are legally addicted to nicotine. Nicotine is a very strong addictive substance. And I don't see that a really smooth transition for those folks. I mean, if somebody's addicted to heroin or alcohol, we have sobering centers, we have opportunities, methadone opportunities for heroin to deal with this. But if it's tobacco, what do we do with all those people that are addicted to tobacco? How do we help them get through that?
Chair Greenlink, Vice Chair Hayden. Actually, we have many more options available for people who are addicted to nicotine than we do for any other substance. We have lots of nicotine replacement, which can be prescribed by a primary care physician or nurse practitioner or PA. We have drugs such as bupropion or Chantix that can help people, can be prescribed, that will help people quit smoking and have been proven effective. We have the 1-800-QUIT-NOW line, which is available free to all Oregonians, that offers smoking cessation programs. All of those are available by prescription, by interaction, and some of them even just by picking up the phone and calling an 800 number. So we have lots and lots of easily available treatments available for nicotine addiction in the comfort of your primary care office.
Okay, thank you. One last. Okay. And also I received, I requested a legislative opinion on whether this would cost anybody their jobs, meaning that is there any scenario where an 18 to 20-year-old was working that could no longer continue in that position. And though it is narrow, there is actually Section 12, Line 23, would eliminate potential of jobs for some people. Now, we might argue that they shouldn't be working there, but it still would be an elimination of those positions, not allowing that age range to be qualified in that type of business. So taking all of this into consideration, there is a solution, which I know may not be supported, but a grandfather clause would allow those workers to continue to work. It would allow people currently addicted to roll up through the system. And it would only be a single date if this was effective January 1st, 2018, if you were born on December 31st, 2019 or before, you would be allowed to continue for that 3-year period of time. It wouldn't be a different date every day. It would be a set date for 3 years, and it would allow people legally that have used this product to continue it through that process. And then after 3 years, then it would just join the same calendar that they have for alcohol sales, that they pull off, the retailers pull that off the wall every day, if you were born before this date, and it would just say alcohol and tobacco. So I'm not sure what the, other than the idealistic point of getting them off quicker, I don't see the complication with a grandfather clause to allow people that are currently on a legal substance to continue through that period of time.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hayden, I appreciate the concerns that you've raised, and they're really two separate issues here. With regard to the section that you cited, you're referring to smoke shops, of which there are exactly 30 licensed in this state that were grandfathered under the Indoor Clean Air Act when it was passed. I know there's a legislator who has an offspring who's under 21 who's working in one of these establishments and would be prohibited from doing so were this bill to pass. I think that's unfortunate. I got to tell you, I'm working on cutting budgets that are going to affect way the heck more people. I'm not trying to be disrespectful, sir, but the number of people under 21 working in stores who would lose their jobs because of this, it would not prohibit somebody 18, 19, or 20 years old from working at Plaid Pantry and selling them. It would only prohibit them from working in one of these 30 currently licensed smoke shops, and that's the only place. I can't swear that that's less than a dozen people, but I'm guessing it's not a lot. With regard to the issue of grandfathering anybody else who's currently addicted, the problem is, if you think back to what my constituents said, people in high school are unlikely to know somebody over 21. They're highly likely to know somebody who's 18, 19, or 20, and we will continue to create new smokers in high schools because people will know somebody who's already 18 or 19. And I think it's much less likely, based on the data that we have about social circles, about peer interactions, for them to know someone. I appreciate your concern. It's something that came up a lot in my caucus when we were having these conversations. But ultimately, it became clear that this was better off done. It's not going to prevent people from that age from smoking. They're going to know people over 21. But we just got to keep them from buying the stuff. There's no penalty to them. There's no adverse effect except for the harm to their own health. And this may make them think twice and may give them that extra impetus they need to quit. So I'm not trying to be disrespectful to you, sir, or to anybody else who's addicted to these substances. I have enormous sympathy for them, and I want to help them. But we need to prevent this from happening to as many Oregonians as possible for the long-term benefit to our state.
Representative Kenny Dyer, do you want to make an opening statement on this?
Do I want to make a statement? Well, I'm very strongly supportive of the bill and the responses that you've given. I appreciate your creativity. But I think on balance, I think it's really important to get on top of this issue now. And I think the story of the your 18-year-old constituent was very compelling. And I was trying to find the statistic here. I don't remember what it is. But of all smokers out there, the vast, vast, vast majority started smoking before 21. I think that's very, very compelling. I think it was like in the 80s or something like that. And maybe Mr. Drucker knows, Dr. Drucker. So, I also am supportive of a tobacco tax to replace this tax. We're 31st among all states right now. And we put too little of it into the TPEP programs, the ones that CDC recommends that we spend. We're only spending 25% of what we should be spending on those programs. But at least of the money that we do spend on the programs, apparently our program integrity is incredibly high. So we're spending it on the kinds of things that they recommend. I will say that Senator Steiner Hayward and myself and Representative Dwayne Stark and Senator Jackie Winters all went to a CDC Winnable Battles conference that focused on what are the biggest game changers that can really change public health. If you invest in it, what's the biggest return on investment? This was led by the CDC and the NCSL in December, and tobacco came up number one as the top issue that we really need to make changes on, and the return on investment is so huge. And so we had very good bipartisan discussions at that, and I'm strongly supportive.
Great. Would you call the next panel? Thank you both.
My apologies, but I'm supposed to be actually in Senator Winter's committee, so I'm going to have to take off. But thank you very, very much. I'll be happy to circle back.
See if you can balance that budget. We
got to raise taxes first. We don't want her balancing that budget.
Thank you. Would you call the next panel, please?
Brian Drucker and Pat Haggerty.
Always nice to see you, Dr.
Thank you, sir.
He didn't say that to me.
I didn't.
Hi. Thank you for the time this afternoon. Chair Greenlick, Vice Chair Hayden, and Vice Chair Nose. My name is Patrick Haggerty. I'm a dentist with the Oregon Dental Association, and I'm practicing at OHSU right now, having previously been in private practice for 30 years. We just recently created a new training program at OHSU, and that's why I'm there now, training dentists in advanced dentistry in a hospital setting. Many of our patients are folks who have been and are addicted to nicotine, generally smoking products. I can tell you that when they get a diagnosis of an oral cancer, a throat cancer, we're part of the workup. Is their mouth in a sufficient health that they can withstand the rigors of radiation, especially radiation therapy for their tumor? I will tell you, people get that diagnosis of cancer, the devastating aspect of it. And then when they come to see me after all their other workups, and I tell them I have to take all their teeth out, that's the final straw. they lose it. Because now Grandpa doesn't look right. Grandpa can't eat what is put in front of him. It gives a whole new perspective to what the tobacco has done to them. It impacts them greatly. On a different note, the number one risk factor for tooth loss, cancer aside, for tooth loss is tobacco, smoking. With smokers, the immune system is not working at full function. One arm is tied behind its back. The blood vessels can't function in a way to allow those blood cells that fight infection to get out there and stop the progression of periodontal disease, periodontitis. I see it every day. My residents see this and the effects of it every day. The common denominator with all of this, the vast majority of these people talked about smoking in their teens. Became habit, became an addiction to the nicotine, and away they went. Whether it's tooth loss or a cancer diagnosis and all that follows from that, and the surgeries, the radiation, the reconstruction that's involved to get them back to a level of social function. This is really an important bill, and I really ask for your support in this. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Greenlee, Vice Chair Nuss, Hayden. I'm Dr. Brian Drucker, Director of the OHSU Knight Cancer Institute. I'm extremely pleased to be here to testify on behalf of this bill. When I became director of the Knight Cancer Institute just about a decade ago, I talked about lowering the death rate from cancer in our state to the lowest in the country. And to do that, there are two things that are critical to accomplish that. And that's, we have to get people that smoke to stop smoking, and we have to keep people from beginning to smoke, because one-third of all cancer deaths are related to smoking. In our state, that's at least 6,000 lives per year. We know, and Representative Kenny Guyer, to your question, we know that 90% of people who smoke will start before age 21. And we know that that happens because nicotine is so incredibly addictive. And the tobacco industry knows if you're not hooked by age 21, you're not likely to become addicted to tobacco products. By raising the tobacco age to 21, we can decrease the number of people who start smoking, and we can decrease the number of people who will die from smoking-related illnesses. It really is that simple. Now, behind me, I'm sure you'll hear some from the vaping industry that want to carve out an exception. Let me talk about that for a minute and some of the science there. Vaping is simply a nicotine delivery system, and we just discussed nicotine is one of the most highly addictive substances. So if we allow that carve out, then people can still start on an addictive substance at age 18. The best the vaping industry can tell you is that it is a less harmful product than smoking. So consider that, less harmful. That's the best we can do. There are many studies now coming out that are showing that there are carcinogens in the vaping products. Yes, not as many as in smoking or in cigarettes, but still many. And there is data that demonstrates that nicotine itself is a stimulant for lung cells and can increase the risk of developing cancer. But third and most important, the reason that law enforcement is supporting this bill is because when they stop somebody age 18 to 21 that has smoking paraphernalia, they can't tell if it's marijuana, is it nicotine, is it vaping, and now all of a sudden we're going to lose their support because they won't be able to tell if we do a carve-out for vaping. So from a public health point of view, I would urge you to keep it all tobacco products and to keep it simple for all of us, for those that have to enforce these laws. And so I'm a big advocate on the public health. I agree with Senator Steinwert Hayward. This is the bill that ultimately will save lives. And if I'm doing my duty as Cancer Center Director to try to decrease the number of lives that are lost from cancer, this is something that I strongly, strongly support, and I urge you to as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions in this panel? Well, again, both, thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
I really appreciate you being here. you call the next panel?
Do you want me to go to the opposition?
No, one more.
One more positive panel. Vivian Smith and Katie King.
Chairman Greenlick, representatives, my name is Vivian Smith, and I'm speaking on behalf of Representative Greg Smith, who unfortunately is out of the building today, and we're speaking on support of Senate Bill 754A. I serve as his health care policy advisor. Prior to working with Representative Smith, I worked in Utah with the Salt Lake County Health Department, specializing in tobacco prevention and cessation. Utah has the lowest smoking rates of all the nation, and that's due to not just culture, but also because of their aggressive campaigns and programs. One of the programs that I led was called END. That stands for Ending Nicotine Dependence, and our target was youth. So we would partner with different schools around the county, and when they would find children who were using tobacco, they would be sent over the weekends, afternoons, over the summer to the health department to learn about how tobacco was harming their health. My youngest student was 8 years old. A lot of these students were caught smoking or using e-cigarettes, which is one of the most up-and-coming forms of tobacco. And they're very, very attractive, and you can see why. A lot of them smell like bubble gum, cotton candy, Skittles, anything you can think of. And they come in a very appealing form. I don't want to say favorite, but the most popular was the Minion from Despicable Me. You can smoke out of that. And of course, children are going to try it. It looks like a toy. The Department of Health and Human Services found that 9 out of 10 smokers started smoking before the ages of 18. And that is tragic. The brain starts developing and continues developing up until the age of 25. Specifically, the prefrontal cortex. The prefrontal cortex is the part of your brain that controls decision-making, impulses, and how you're affected by peer pressure. All very important things when you're in high school, middle school. So that children who are using these tobacco products and they are not knowing what they are putting into their body, they are not realizing the effects. And by the age of 25, these habits are cemented. And so it becomes much more difficult to quit using these products. The New England Journal of Medicine found that of the people they surveyed, 75% supported increasing the age to 21. Of those people, of that 75%, there were children or young adults between the ages of 18 to 24 and current and former smokers. What does this tell us? This tells us that people who are currently or have been smoking wish that they hadn't started in the first place. I think it's very important. I firmly believe that it's very important that we raise the age to 21 because we can make it more difficult for youth to access tobacco. It's not the perfect solution, but it is a huge tool that can help reduce seeing an 8-year-old give up his summer to join me at the health department in the lecture room. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Katie King, and I'm here today on behalf of the March of Dimes in support of Senate Bill 754, which raises the minimum age to buy tobacco products to 21. As you're aware, the minimum age to buy tobacco right now is 18 years old, and on the average, 90% of adult smokers begin smoking during their teenage years. Stop them smoking then, and they'll never start. So why is March of Dimes concerned about this? Because prenatal and postnatal environmental smoke exposure have proved devastating for the developing fetus as well as for young children. Exposure to tobacco smoke in utero or in the environment after birth has been linked to increased incidence of respiratory infections, ear infections, and behavioral disorders. Children and infants who are exposed to prenatal maternal smoking and in-home environmental tobacco smoke have a high incidence of severe asthma. Children and infants who are exposed to tobacco are often hospitalized longer for asthma and respiratory infections when compared to children who are not. If these complications aren't enough, tobacco use during pregnancy increases the risk of premature birth by more than 50% and low birth weight by as much as 90%. Babies born with these complications average $49,000 in medical costs during the first year, compared to $4,500 for a birth without complications. In Oregon, over 10% of pregnant women use tobacco during the last 3 months of pregnancy. And this is important. Younger women have a higher prenatal smoking rate than older women. Half of Oregon's births are paid for by Medicaid, and pregnant women on Medicaid are over 5 times more likely to smoke during pregnancy. The state is also paying a disproportionate share of the financial cost for prenatal smoking. Failure to decrease the use of tobacco and environmental tobacco exposure will cause continued poor health outcomes for mothers, infants, and children. The March of Dimes supports legislative and regulatory action to reduce exposure to tobacco smoke among pregnant women and infants, and we ask that you support this bill. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions to this panel? Thank you very much. Would you call the next panel, please?
John Calder, Devereux Ty, or Ty Devereux. Jana Jarvis.
Oh, I'm John Calder.
Okay. We've got 3 people.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Jana Jarvis, president of the Oregon Trucking Association. I'm not here to speak on raising the smoking age to 21. I am here simply to ask for a technical fix to this bill. I mentioned that when I met with you, Mr. Chair. In 2009, the federal government passed what they called the Prevent All Cigarette Trafficking Act of 2009 that went into effect July 1, 2010. And in Section 2 of that act, it placed a preemption on states and local governments and tribal governments from requiring any specific action on the part of carriers that were transporting tobacco products. And so there is some existing language in Oregon statute that's included in Senate Bill 754 in Section 13 that needs to be removed in order for us to comply with the federal act. And that's the reason for my testimony here today. And so I would ask for a technical amendment for that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Have you proposed that?
Yes, and I talked with your office about it. So hopefully that's in the works.
Yes, it must be the amendment.
Yes.
Check out.
We may decide whether we're going to be doing any amendments, or if we are, we'll consider that.
May I add one more comment? There was another House bill that we did amend with that, like to take that existing language out, but I unfortunately missed this until the 11th hour. So I mentioned it to Senator Steiner Hayward, and she asked me to fix it on this side. So,
will you look at the A13s? They're from Representative Greenlee. Make sure that that's your amendment.
All right, I will.
They're on old.
I haven't. Okay, the A13s.
Yeah, we just put them up.
Okay, thank you.
And yours are up.
Next, please.
Good afternoon. Thank you for allowing me an opportunity to speak here this morning or this afternoon. I really just represent Jackson's Food Stores on the retailer side. My name's Devereux Ty. So just sharing concerns. Probably the number one concern with the proposed bill would be the effect that it would have on the retails, on the retailer for sales regarding the ability for 18, 19, 20-year-olds to still be able to purchase tobacco products on tribal reservations. if they have the ability to still purchase products there. They're not coming to our retailers for those, for not just those items, but many other items that they would be purchasing along with the tobacco products. So just some consideration to the effects that the retailer takes on business and sales would be great. We'd be grateful for that. Sorry, I went blank there. Any questions?
Are you representing a specific retail group?
I'm with Jackson's Food Stores.
So your company is opposing it, is that?
Correct.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
I'm John Calder. I own a smoke shop. And from everything that I've heard here today, I should be dead. I've been smoking for 65 years this year.
You beat the odds.
You have mail that I know has been sent to each one of you that shows that so far this year, 10 states have denied the same bill on its own prerogative because it will solve nothing. Most kids, like I did, most kids when they go into puberty, they will follow their parents, their grandparents, their older siblings, aunts, uncles, whoever their peer is. If they smoke, the kids are going to smoke. And that's starting about 12 years old. If the parents drink, they're going to drink. And that'll start about the same age. Mom runs into the medicine cabinet to pop a pill to feel better. The kid's going to do the same thing. What we need is education, not a bunch of rules and regulations more than what we already have. We already have enough laws on the books, but there's no bite in the law. An officer of the law will drive by, see 8, 9, 10-year-olds smoking on the street. He won't even stop. He'll just keep on going. I see them every day on skateboards, 12 to 16 years old. I see them every day on skateboards, smoking a cigarette, going up and down the street. Now, how are you going to stop that? They don't buy them from us. They get them from their parents. They get them from their whoever they look up to. So it's a hard course to go. Have you got any questions for me?
Any questions at this panel? Thank you very much.
You bet.
You call the last panel, please.
Mr. Gonzalez? Okay. Jason Weber? Arturo?
Atreyu.
Good afternoon, Chairmember Greenleg and members of the committee. My name is Atreyu Gonzalez. I do not support Senate Bill 754A as a 20-year-old adult who has the option to go to war and die for our great nation, can legally marry whom I please and have children with, take out a home or school loan that I can take the rest of my life to pay off. These are major decisions that any 18-year-old adult might have to make. As an 18-year-old adult, in the state of Oregon, you can purchase a shotgun or handgun or even obtain a concealed weapons permit. Vote, and if you were to break a law, would be held accountable for actions and could possibly go to prison. If Senate Bill 754 were to pass, to 18-year-old to 20-year-olds could do all of these things, but as an adult could no longer go to a store and purchase a product that you deem unsafe for an adult to use. Of that age bracket. I understand that you feel this bill is to stop underage sale or distribution of said products to minors, and I agree that anyone under the age of 18 should not have access to tobacco products, but to take away the rights of taxpaying adult citizens in order to accomplish this is unfair and unjust, in my opinion. As a proud ex-smoker who quit with a vaporizer, which is not a tobacco product, I know this bill should not have anything to do with vapor products or any nicotine replacement therapy that helps people get away from traditional smokeless and combustible tobaccos that are known to cause cancer. Thank you, and I would be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you for coming to testify. We appreciate that.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Yes, sir.
Chair Greenlick, Vice Chair Knows, Vice Chair Hayden, members of the committee. My name is Jason Weber. I'm from Roseburg. I started smoking when I was 14. I was already accepted by my peers, but I guess I thought it made me cooler. We always found ways to get them. Friends stole them from parents. Older people would buy them for us. Sometimes we were so desperate we'd steal them from the ashtrays in front of businesses. By the time I was 17, it started wearing on my health pretty bad. A pack a day, I was very much addicted to these cancer sticks. I knew I needed to quit. My parents begged me to quit, and every doctor I visited begged me to quit. I seriously tried everything for over a decade and multiple times. Nicotine patches, nicotine gum, lozenges, cold turkey, and even hypnotism. None of these methods worked. I never made it further than a week. I never gave up wanting to kick the deadly habit, though. At the age of 27, my health was terrible. I woke up every day with a heavy chest, congestion, feeling old. Having been a smoker for 14 years, I couldn't even run a block without hacking up a lung. But then I found vaping, and I knew that was it. I threw my cigarettes away, and I was completely confident that I was going to never smoke again. Within a month, I felt so much better. No more hacking, no more heavy chest. I could actually taste and smell things like food. I no longer smelled like a dirty ashtray, and I could tell that because I could start smelling the smoker from 10 feet away. I worked as a manager at Grocery Outlet at the time, and I was so excited about this life-saving technology and what it had done for me that I had to help all my friends and coworkers find the same success, and I did. Long story short, I was so passionate about the cause that I ended up starting my own business and opening up a vape shop a couple years later. I've been now smoke-free for over 6 years, and I've ran a successful business for over 3 years. We have helped around 1,000 customers quit traditional tobacco with the use of vaping technology. What happens is our customers realize they can get all the nicotine they usually would, minus the 4,000 chemicals that was killing them. My customers and I are 95% safer than we used to be for this, and that's proven by the Royal College of Physicians and many other studies. Sorry. My shop abides by the law, and we only sell to adults 18 and older. And if you pass this law, we will abide by that too and only sell to 21 and older. But I'm here because it seems like most of you are failing to realize there are a lot of adults in between the age of 18 to 21 who will be driven back to smoking because you think you're doing them a service by passing T21. I'm neutral on this bill because I'm okay with raising the age of smoking. But to ignore the undeniable truth that vaping has been the most successful method for adults of all ages to quit combustible tobacco is counterproductive to what you think you'll be doing. It's time to stop burying our heads. It's time to stop making excuses. The proof is in the way 10 million of us Americans feel in the U.S. and 6 million in the U.K. It's in the credible research. It's right in front of your faces. It's time to get on board with Great Britain and embrace this life-saving technology and stop pining over fluffed-up, suggestible surveys. It's time to be a part of the solution and saving a billion lives. I urge you to support an amendment to exclude vaping from T21. Then I would be in full support of the bill. Also, because of what I heard from the opposing side, if nicotine in the vaporizers is so scary, how come we're not throwing in the patches and gum as well in this bill? Because that only has a 7% success rate, and vaping has a 70% success rate. So if nicotine really does cause cancer, which it doesn't, we should probably look at those things too, because that would be pretty scary to let those slide. So thank you for your time.
Thank you also for coming. Where did you say you were from?
Roseburg. Thanks.
Are there any questions to this panel?
No.
Thank you very much. I think that's all the witnesses, is that right?
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 7, what is it? 754A. 754A. Why don't we open up a public hearing on one of the other bills and get a couple out of the way?
We have, Mr. Chair, we have four bills that all are relating to the Board of Nursing. And we have Ruby Jason signed up. She's the only one signed up on all four.
Okay. So. Well, let me open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 72, Senate Bill 73, Senate Bill 74, and Senate Bill
269.
Good afternoon.
Welcome back.
Thank you, Chair Greenlick, Vice Chair Nose, Vice Chair Hayden. As of last week, we discussed three bills for the Board of Nursing. All were language cleanup. Senate Bill 72, 73, and 74 continue that theme, language cleanup for a statute that is decades old. So these first three bills are with that. Senate Bill 72, the Board of Pharmacy and Nursing agree that provider competency can be assured through other means already available under current rulemaking authority. Nurse practitioners were granted dispensing authority in 2005. In 2015, the Boards of Nursing and Pharmacy conducted a 10-year review and decided that the restrictive language in statute was no longer necessary. The language in several sections of ORS 678.3903 regarding the steps a practitioner must perform to be granted the authority to dispense drugs is outdated and no longer reflects the current dispensing authority requirements of either the Board of Nursing or the Board of Pharmacy, and the change will bring a process of granting dispensing authority to nurse practitioners and clinical nurse specialists into alignment with that of other health care providers. All practitioners who apply for prescriptive and dispensing authority attest to following practice standards outlined in the information containing in the prescriptive and dispensing authority in Oregon, the board's educational brochure on the subject. There's no fiscal impact, and we have received support from our fellow board members on the Board of Pharmacy, the Oregon Nurses Association, the Nurse Practitioners of Oregon, and there have been no opposition to that.
Thank you.
Okay. Senate Bill 73.
I can close the public hearing. House Bill 72.
And for the record, my name is Ruby Jason, the Executive Director of the Oregon State Board of Nursing. Senate Bill 73 continues our language cleanup. The purpose of the bill is to add clinical nurse specialists and certified registered nurse anesthetists to the prescriptive privilege renewal requirements outlined in 678.1015 to better reflect current advanced nursing practice and assure public safety. It also removes references to postmarks to allow for internet-based licensing process. Currently, the language in 678.1015 is outdated as it refers only to nurse practitioners as needing to keep up their prescriptive privilege licensure current, and as of 2015 legislative session, all advanced registered nurse license types, such as practitioners, clinical nurse specialists, and nurse anesthetists, have prescriptive privileges, and they should keep all those privileges current and renew on time. And further, the bill revises outdated references to the statute to postmark letters to currently reflect the available electronic technology, and no fiscal impact and no known opposition.
Close the work session on Senate Bill 73. I'm sorry, I blew it. Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 73. It's a hard job.
I know. Are we opening 74?
Okay, yeah, all right. They're all open.
They're all open. Okay. The next one is about aligning the current statute language with modern medical practice by adding advanced nurse practitioners and other authorized licensed and independent health practitioners to the list of providers whose orders for medical treatment can be executed by registered nurses and licensed practical nurses. Currently, the statute specifies that registered nurses and licensed practical nurses may execute medical orders only by the order of a physician or a dentist. In the decades since that language was adopted, the healthcare team has expanded to include nurse practitioners, clinical nurse specialists, certified registered nurse anesthetists, and other independent licensed healthcare practitioners who are also credentialed by their employers as LIPs. The statutory language is significantly out of step with the current healthcare environment and other statutes described in ORS 678. And just as a comment, in our rules, we have a complete list of practitioners commissioners that registered nurses and licensed practical nurses can execute medical orders from, and that does include our PA colleagues, our physician assistant colleagues. There's no fiscal impact, and we have received support from various stakeholders.
Thank you. Close public hearing on Senate Bill 74.
Okay.
269.
Okay, 269. Okay. This bill is different than the others. This actually does ask for new language. In June 2016, stakeholders presented to the Board of Nursing their concern regarding out-of-state students traveling into Oregon as part of a school event. ORS 678.021 requires that all nurses must be licensed by the board to practice nursing in Oregon. As the law currently stands, nurses who are caregivers for students in another state who have to be licensed in Oregon before they could accompany their students into Oregon for a school field trip, regardless of the length of time.
What would be an example of what?
Excuse me?
What would be an example of the kind of
The School for the Blind in Washington State goes across the border for a field trip to the Oregon Zoo, and so nurses will accompany them. Some of these children have significant medical issues, and those nurses cannot take care of those children in the state of Oregon, even though a lot of those kids are both Oregon and Washington residents, because state licensure for nursing is a state-based licensure. They also have to be licensed in the state of Oregon in order to take care of someone who's physically in Oregon.
Okay, keep going.
Okay. Let's see. Otherwise, the students with medical conditions would not be able to take part in the school event. The stakeholders felt it was unnecessary burden to put the school nurses, considering the brief time they would be spending in the state with their students, and this bill would amend ORS 678031 to add an exemption for out-of-state nurses to accompany their students into Oregon during school-sponsored events, and this then they will accompany other exemptions such as temporary transport teams or disaster teams or in the state only to present an educational program. The exemption presented in SB 269 is comparable to those current exemptions and not place any Oregonians or Washingtonians or whatever state you're from at risk. And there's no fiscal impact to this.
Thank you. We'll close the public hearing. Senate Bill 269. We'll probably work all eight of those bills next week. They've asked us to slow down until we get the third reading list down a little bit with House bills before we start piling on Senate bills.
We'll be here whenever you want us here.
Thank you very
much.
Thank you. Wow, those are good. We are adjourned.